Recording.
You're recording?
Recording. Hello, Jessica.
I didn't get to make my joke yet.
Oh, what was it?
Well, I asked you if you were, you said that you were queer even when you were a man of the woods, and I was going to say, oh, I lost my joke now. It was something about witties, frankly. Let's just be honest. That's what the joke was.
Witties?
Witties.
Oh, I see. Oh, got it. All right. Yeah,
it really had a moment, and it was before the call. I mean, before the recording. Well, hello.
How are you doing?
I'm really hot. It suddenly is burning up in Brooklyn.
I'm hot here too, but that's because I've been having a bonfire. I'm still very jealous. We tried to do this a week ago, and I got a power outage because I'm in the Catskills, and it happens sometimes. And I'm still very jealous of your hair, because you can see I'm doing COVID hair. I'm plowing through in solidarity with all those who still can't go to the barbers. But you had the sneaky hairdo.
Well, you know, I mean, salons are open now in New York, but I haven't gone. But there are benefits to having friends in the beauty industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good. It looks very appropriate for someone working on a memoir.
Yes, it does. Getting on pretty well.
Really?
Had a really good chat with you know that thing we were just writing, you think, oh gosh, is this taking any shape? And then I forgot that I had this Dropbox sharing folder with my editor, and so she's been able to read everything I've been putting in, kind of worryingly. And so we had this big chat, and I've done quite a lot. I've done more than I thought, and it's actually taking shape. It's in a good place. So that was a good thing to go into the holidays with, because I'm not sort of, you know, panicking or guilty about having a few days of not going to my computer.
I think that's great. There's nothing like success to make you want to work harder.
Right. So what's happening with you and Outright in these troubled times?
It has been quite a moment. So we're talking on the 2nd of July, which means that Pride Month is officially over, but of course Pride really never ends.
Hashtag Pride never stops.
That's right. I think it was a heart-wrenching and also very inspiring Pride Month. I think, you know, a lot of people that Outright works with have been personally impacted by structural racism and police brutality.
Yes.
And so it's been a month of dialogue with our friends and colleagues who are struggling with what the devastating effect of racism has been like in their lives. And it's been a time when Outright has been really happy to join statements of solidarity and support, condemning structural racism, calling for the defunding of police departments, and calling for reparations and other forms of long-term social change to counter anti-Blackness and lift up all people.
And it's been fascinating about how, I mean, sometimes in America we are very American-centric, but actually the whole George Floyd murder and consequent protests have gone reverberated around the world, haven't they? And that must have a big impact on some of the places where you've got people on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really incredible to see the ways that people have said, look, anti-Blackness is not just a phenomenon in the United States. You know, and we've seen friends and colleagues marching in France, in Canada, in, you know, every country imaginable. And I think the solidarity has taken two forms. You know, on the one hand, it's been really about an expression of solidarity with those who've been calling for dismantling structural racism. And then the other piece has been about looking at the way the LGBTIQ community not only needs to do this work in solidarity with movements for civil rights, but also needs to do our own reflection. Mm-hmm. And look at who the leadership of LGBTIQ organizations are, mm-hmm. Overly white, mm-hmm. And look at the ways that we need to invest in and redistribute power to center the experiences of BIPOC LGBTIQ people.
Yeah.
That's been really good to see. That needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's been really heartwarming and fascinating, watching big companies, small companies, little bars like Club Cumming, all making a statement about how they want to proceed going forward. And, you know, that hasn't happened before. We've all sort of said, oh gosh, we must try and do better. But I think there's a definite sea change in the way people are talking about racism, and also about racism within LGBTQ IQ community. Like I'm really heartened by the number of, you know, Black Trans Lives Matters placards I see everywhere in marches. And I think that's really, really heartening that Black trans, especially Black trans women, and the huge amount of violence against them is being not celebrated, of course, that's not the word, but being kind of protested about and kind of having a light shone on it, because it's about time.
It is about time. And, you know, I've been seeing news coverage in the most mainstream spaces. And frankly, that is what you need. I mean, to produce radical social and cultural change, it can't just be Black trans activists, Black trans people saying, no, we wish someone would pay attention. It requires the rest of us actually stopping to learn the names of Black trans people who've been murdered and then figuring out what we can do about it.
Yeah, yeah. And how is it around the world in your different offices around the world? What's the sort of feeling, and both with this and with COVID? I mean, both issues are really rocking us right now.
Yeah, I think...
Sorry, I'm just sweating profusely from my...
You look like you're glowing.
I'm glowing with my mountain man gardening thing, but yeah, that's better. Okay.
I think that you have a lot of fans that have a big crush on you, and they're used to seeing you perfectly coiffed, so seeing a little sweat is doing
that. This is the new me. This is the new... My glasses are steaming up with the heat of my body right now. That's how hot I am.
Woo! This conversation is taking a turn. I think there's two things. I think the protests against anti-Blackness have shown that when our movements mobilize, when we take up streets, when we challenge power, transformation can happen. I mean, who would have thought that the state flag of Mississippi would remove the symbol of the Confederacy?
Yeah, that's huge, yeah.
Who would have thought that US Army bases would remove the names of Confederate generals that were still gracing them in 2020? But it's happening. And the conversation about not just police accountability, but defunding the police has gone from a dream that some of us used to talk about on the margins to being something you hear about debated in the halls of Congress. And so on a broad level, I think that's giving anyone who's an activist enormous hope. You know, we want change to come faster. We want it to be more transformative. We want it to be long lasting, but it's happening. And so that has been energizing. I think, the complimentary question you asked about how is COVID impacting our communities is really, really hard. I mean, I am...
Mental health sort of issues.
Yeah. Oh God, the mental health issues are extreme. You and I talked about this a little bit once before, but you know, you have queer people who never would spend time around their families before.
Yes.
Who would be, whether...
Maybe not even out to their families.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they would take every chance they could to be with community.
Yeah.
And now their mental health is just plummeting because they're stuck around these people who don't permit them to be themselves.
Yeah, that must be awful. Awful. And also, I mean, the idea that there's been a huge rise in domestic violence as well, I've been reading about. And I'm sure that's been a problem for queer people who are trapped in situations that they don't feel comfortable in. That must be, it's just, I mean, the idea that you can't get away literally because of this virus must be so terrifying. Have you seen a sort of rise in people reaching out to Outright because of that?
Yeah, we've seen a sevenfold increase in emergency appeals coming into Outright.
Wow.
And Outright created a COVID LGBTIQ emergency fund, which we've been very proud of. But in just 3 weeks of accepting applications for emergency grants, we received 1,500 requests for assistance.
Wow.
And Alan, we're giving out grants that are not larger than $10,000. They start at $2,500. So we're talking about microloans, basically. But even small amounts of money can make the difference between life and death.
Yeah. Gosh. Is that all around the world? These appeals are coming in?
Yeah, we received applications from 181 countries. Oh,
wow. So what is Outright doing? I mean, in terms of, aside from helping people and giving money, are you sort of a bit stymied because you can't go to the office and you can't all work together? I mean, are you just becoming a Zoom junkie like the rest of us?
Oh, Zoom, my least favorite four-letter word. you know, LGBTIQ communities are used to working with nothing. You know, we know how to be resilient. And even in this context, we're figuring out ways to survive. But Outright has been affected, like everybody else. You know, probably we're more virtual. You know, we have staff and offices in 7 countries. So it wasn't like going to the office was central to our functionality.
Yeah.
But so we've done a bunch of things. You know, we created this COVID Emergency Response Fund, which has been great. As of this week, we've raised $1 million for it, which is insane. And it means that we've been able to distribute grants to 65 organizations so far. We're releasing another tranche of 30 grants over the next 2 weeks, and then there will be another round of grants after that. So that reaches a lot of very grassroots community organizations. We released a human rights report that I think is extremely important, because if there isn't any information in the news cycle saying, guess what? COVID doesn't impact everybody the same way. Some of us fall through the cracks.
Right.
Then government and humanitarian responses just forget about us.
Right.
You know, in the Philippines, the police were the ones doing emergency food distribution.
Wow.
And so this lesbian family went to the police and said, "Hi, you know, we're here for our food care package." And the police said, no, this is only for families. Right? You don't qualify. So it's been things like that. And then in addition to that, you know, there've been a lot of webinars to just sort of connect with the community virtually, because even in this moment, there are opportunities, right? By using Zoom, by organizing online, we can actually support more activists around the world that are coping with similar problems and trying to figure out how to serve their community. Mm. So we put a lot of energy into that. And at this point, I don't even know how many people have joined us in these training conversations, but we've reached many activists and organizations around the world.
That's great. And of course, it hasn't all been bad news. I mean, the Supreme Court's ruling last week, stopping our community being fired because of their gender or their sexuality. I thought that was a beacon of hope in the middle of all this torpor.
Yeah, who would have thought this Supreme Court would produce 3 good rulings in 1 month? Yeah, it's a great decision. And it's a great decision because what it says is that anytime you recognize discrimination on the basis of sex, you must recognize that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity is possible.
Right.
And the reason that matters from a global LGBTIQ perspective, and the reason that matters to Outright, is because it advances an argument that we've been making in international law and at the UN for decades, which is to say, it doesn't matter if you don't have sexual orientation and gender identity in your constitution. There are very few constitutions in the world other than like Fiji that have it. But so long as sex is there, we're a part of it. We exist. And so that precedent is not just important for American workers, but has the potential to influence how courts think globally.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And also there's been, like, in terms of global discussions, the whole TERF thing with, starring J.K. Rowling and the kind of this conversation about trans-exclusive radical feminists. I mean, to me, it seems really silly because lots of them don't seem radical feminists. And I remember a couple of years ago being horrified about Germaine Greer, who is indeed a radical feminist or was, and her issues about her, where she defines and discusses trans people. I was horrified by that, but I didn't realize it was sort of taken on a whole movement. And now there's this acronym. But I mean, how damaging, how soon does it filter down, do you think, the kind of the J.K. Rowling thing, that I don't know if you saw the thing in Baroness Nicholson and Munro Bergdorf, the model in Britain this past week. She was, I mean, just dreadful. Because Baroness Nicholson was a judge for the Booker Prize, the Man Booker Prize, the literary prize, mm-hmm. and was making these incredible, was tweeting these incredibly transphobic things. So I tried to stop the same-sex marriage. But I mean, just the idea that someone who had such radical homophobic and transphobic views would be the vice president of an organization that is about freedom of speech and freedom of expression was really horrible. So there's been a lot of downsides to this. People maybe have too much time on their hands. And how quickly do you see the negative results of that?
Oh, you just asked one of the most painful and most important questions. I mean, first of all, I wish there was a different term for so-called TERFs, because, sorry, Brooklyn streets, I'm to Alan coming, be quiet.
It sounds like my tractor and trailer up here kind of coming.
It was just a little motorcycle rider coming by to see if he could get a spot at you. I mean, I don't believe that they're trans excluding radical feminists, because I don't believe they're feminists.
Exactly.
Because feminism is about an analysis of gender as it intersects with all other forms of oppression. It doesn't mean that cisgendered biological women assigned so at birth from a fucking doctor in a hospital get to determine who identifies as a woman. No.
I know.
So the first thing is we need a different term for them, because I think it is very bad for people to appropriate the term of feminist to justify excluding, oppressing, and dehumanizing transgender women, who are the exact women we should be supporting.
Absolutely. And also what I think it does, it's taken the whole feminist movement back so far, because it absolutely brings it that only women can be feminists. That it's only about women. And that's what I think has been, I thought there was really good work being done where people could go like, I'm a feminist. I believe that we should be equal, we should have equality, the playing field should be level, all that stuff. And now it's become this kind of women fighting again. And then women not being prepared to be open and kind to other, they wouldn't call them women. I mean, that's the other thing as well. I mean, it's just, what happened?
Look, I think a couple of things have happened. So one is about, I'll say the first is about internal politics. And that is about how sometimes we fight.
My boyfriend.
We're fighting over the same piece of pie instead of trying to grow the pie.
Right.
You know, the truth is that the redistribution of resources has not adequately resourced women globally, women's rights movements. And there's much more work to be done for women's rights. Women are still paid less, sexually assaulted more, subjected to sexual harassment, and shut out of power, and on and on and on. But for some people, this means that we have to look at someone to blame. Instead of saying, we need to collectivize, we need to work intersectionally, we need to expand the number of allies to include feminist men, to include members of the LGBTIQ community. And I think that's a huge mistake. I also think it harkens back to a tension that has existed between women's rights advocates and LGBTIQ activists in some contexts, where LGBTIQ people are seen as a political liability to certain women's rights activists. We can say that. You and I can admit that, right? You know, we're seen as man-hating lesbians. We're too hairy. We're too inappropriate, all that stuff. But I think the bigger issue is not the sort of internal fissures, because I actually think the TERFs and their people are small in number. But there's a lot of external influence amplifying their voices, whether it's Family Watch International or any of those other right-wing conservative organizations. Alan, they have hundreds of millions of dollars, the Heritage Foundation, CFAM. They outspend our community, our queer, feminist, progressive, radical, beautiful community, 100 times to what we have. So they make these minority voices sound mainstream and credible, and then it catches on.
Is it also, I mean, it seems to me that, because, you know, both the examples I mentioned there was Baroness Nicholson and J.K. Rowling, both in Britain. And I, you know, just before the lockdown started, I was doing a play in London, and I actually kind of thought, in terms of the whole trans movement, that Britain is a bit behind the times, and a bit sort of, so in a funny way, what I'm asking is the TERF thing more of a British thing than an American thing?
So I went to school in London, and so I pay a lot of attention to queer British politics. And to this day, a quarter of our board is British, based in London. We have a lot of extraordinary colleagues in the LGBTIQ sector in the UK who we love. We have good relationships with even British government officials. And my best friends are British, living in London in a super cute flat. So I have to give them a shout out and love. But I do think that the movement in the UK, the queer movement in the UK, was behind on transgender rights and recognition. I mean, it was only in 2014, 2015, that Stonewall adopted transgender rights as a part of their platform.
Oh, really? Good. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the reason why that's relevant is because Stonewall is the best resource, best known now, thankfully, LGBT organization in the UK. And so if the leading voice of the movement wasn't educating its base and educating the public for decades, well, the truth is that the UK fell behind.
Yeah.
And transgender people are the ones who suffered.
So what can we do about that? I mean, is it just a thing? I mean, how come, I mean, it's actually hilarious that America in this instance is more progressive than a European country. There's a turn up. But what can we do? And is it just something, it's just a matter of time? Or is it, I mean, this reaction against the TERF thing seems to be, have been a lot of dissenting and, you know, damning voices, but it's had a lot of coverage. Those views are not nichey, and that's scary.
I think it is scary. I mean, your other question was like, define the impact this is having.
Yes.
I mean, to be clear, this has left the chat rooms and bars where queer communities debate issues. This has moved into the political and policy mainstream, which can have a devastating effect on transgender people, because transgender people already experience higher unemployment, higher workplace discrimination, higher physical and sexual violence than cisgender people. That's just a fact. And transgender women experience violence that you wouldn't even dream of being possible. So
the life expectancy for a transgender woman is 35 of color. Isn't that incredible?
There's no way to comprehend that number in 2020.
No.
There's no way to justify or excuse it. It needs to be a four alarm fire. Yeah. I mean, what do? We say there is no feminism without transgender rights. You know, what do we do? We also say there are no LGBTIQ rights without feminism.
Mm-hmm.
We have to work together. Because the root causes of oppression of women and queer folks are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's traditional, stereotypical, outdated, and narrow definitions of what your gender can be and what you can do with your body.
Yeah.
So I think we can get through this, but I think it requires people like you and me. I identify as cisgendered. I don't know how you identify, but you present as cisgender. It requires that we make transgender rights a part of our everyday vernacular.
Yeah.
But let us break news in case you have something to share. Do you want to, did I misread your gender expression, Alan? Tell your fans, they want to know.
I'm cisgender. I'm a cisgendered male and I'm staying one for now.
Okay. All right. I was trying to create a little gossip. Oh, well, next time.
You know, life is long.
Life is long.
That was one of the most, I mean, I joke, of course, but that was one of the most awful things I thought in that sort of essay from J.K. Rowling about why she'd made those comments and stuff like that, was this, the idea that she might have, in her, as a young woman, changed her gender if it was open to her to do that, because she was had a difficult time as a young teen. And I thought, oh, and then there was also the bathroom thing. Like, you know, like I thought that was, you know, people in crazy Republicans or even more right than Republicans, crazy right-wing people in North Carolina were doing this thing about bathrooms. We didn't expect, you know, feminist, left-wing, intelligent, world-renowned authors to be doing the same, men are going to dress up as women and go into toilets and rape. But I mean, just the logistics of that on its own, I mean, come on. But I did think it was all those tropes, like that one, and this one was kind of new to me, that I don't, you know, I'm sort of explaining or justifying some seemingly transphobic, I'll give her the benefit of doubt, comments because she feels that young people might change their gender just on a whim because they are feeling bad that month. I thought that was so shocking and so ignorant and so damaging.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know that when someone like her, she says that stuff, that is gobbled up as ammunition for the kind of more extreme people who use all those things. I just thought it was so, I just couldn't believe it, actually. I can't quite believe the toilet thing, the bathroom thing, was a few years ago here, and it's out of the way now. I think everyone's like, that's just ridiculous. We're all, you know, there was such a big thing about it. And also I loved one of the things I loved when that happened afterwards, it said, I saw these posts everywhere, it said, it was never just about bathrooms. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's exactly what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
It's not about bathrooms. It's not about you having had a bad time when you were a teen. And it's not about, and I'm so sorry that she went through the sexual assault and domestic violence. It's not about that. You know what I mean? I think it's about transphobia. Mm. And I just don't understand it. I just can't. I just did. And also, I just don't know why do you keep saying it? When you know that it's not gone down well in the past. Also, how much does it cost you? Like if you don't, you know, that whole sex versus gender thing that I still can't really wrap my head around. It's just, it's so shocking to me that if someone feels that they were born the wrong gender and they're in the wrong body and they are defining themselves by a different gender to the one they were born with, how much does it cost you just to be kind to them and refer to them as the gender they want to be referred to? I mean, just on a simple kindness, compassionate level, is I'm speechless after talking for like 5 minutes. I'm now speechless.
Honestly, I feel the same way. You know, just to share a personal experience, my partner identifies as non-binary. And it was a big decision. They take all pronouns. They were assigned female at birth. They're a women's human rights activist. They're gender justice activists. And so they spent their career fighting for the category of woman to be more expansive. For someone who's butch, who likes to wear a suit, who looks really hot in a tie, to be seen as a woman, right? Because the definition of woman has to be more than biological determinism, lipstick, and heels.
Yeah.
And then our language and culture evolved, and suddenly my partner had more options for how they identified.
Yeah.
And it used to be that whenever we would go into a public bathroom together or we were out to a restaurant, they would be misgendered and it would be met with awkwardness, shame, and a little bit of embarrassment, right? The person who misgendered them would then sort of do a double check and feel embarrassed. Oh, I got it wrong.
Yeah.
And when my partner embraced all pronouns, suddenly they felt free.
Right.
Yeah. You can call me any pronoun and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Ellen, like it almost moves me to tears, because all that you want for someone that you love is that they can move safely and freely through the world.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's what J.K. Rowling and Donald Trump and the Baroness, they don't understand.
Yeah, no.
This is not about taking away someone else's rights. This is about ensuring that everybody has rights.
Yeah. And the feeling, this whole thing of being safe, I mean, like, look at just the level of violence against trans women, and especially trans women of color. And the life expectancy thing. And, you know, that life expectancy is not to do with, you know, they're not going to war and they're not, you know, it's to do with being killed.
Mm-hmm.
Being killed, just being murdered for being who they are. And that, so that giving any fuel to people who are angry and ignorant and want to harm those people is criminal in my mind. I mean, really, it's so irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think you're absolutely right. We've got to just make sure that we do not allow trans rights to be excluded from any of the other rights that we are fighting for, LGBTIQ and feminist women's rights too. I really do think that's it. We should have more letters in our acronym.
I think that's right. You know, just going back to the issue of what impact J.K. Rowling's analysis has, when you read the LGBT employment discrimination case from the Supreme Court, what was that? Was that only last week?
Last week, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So much has happened in a week. You read Kavanaugh's dissent, and it's a disgusting dissent. Of course it is. You know, he says that we're not entitled to rights for whatever reason makes sense to him. And then he has this sort of apology paragraph, which is, but, you know, millions of gays and lesbians have fought to win recognition and progress, and they should be proud of all they have achieved. And it's completely twisted, because he's quite literally voting against our protection.
Mm-hmm.
And he's recognizing us. But he very carefully singles out gays and lesbians as people he honors, and he makes no reference to transgender people.
Right, even though the whole brief is about transgender.
It's not just about transgender, right? It was based on three cases.
Brought by a transgender person.
And also cisgendered queer people. Because there's three cases and the decision looks at all of them. But the point, going back to the question of not just what do we do with our rage, but how do we turn it into something productive? It's we refuse to let them appropriate our struggle, the gay and lesbian movement in their eyes, as an acceptable struggle, while transgender rights get forgotten.
Yeah.
That is not okay. Yeah. Not on our watch. And we also have to just sort of figure out what we can do. I mean, Outright did this emergency fund for COVID, and most of the applications that we received for assistance were from LGBTIQ organizations. but a very high number of them were from trans organizations. They were so high that a member of our grants review panel contacted me and said, I just want to ask you, is the fund set up for transgender women who are doing sex work? And I said, no, it's for everybody. Why do you ask? And she said, because I've reviewed like 25 applications and so many of the stories I'm reading about are from transgender women in sex work. And I asked her, well, why do you think that is? They don't have as many job opportunities as someone who can walk into a corporate setting and pass.
Yeah. And that's been the case forever in our, for trans people.
That's right. Yeah, well, Alan, tell me, can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
I mean, what gives you hope right now?
That Donald Trump will not be our president of America in November, after November, whatever it is. That
I agree with you. I agree with you.
And also, I think this whole thing of being, having this sort of time out we've all had in lockdown and being, you know, outside of our normal routines of life and having time to meditate and ruminate and kind of think about how our actions impact other people. And actually, you know, when we go out into the world, like wearing a mask, I think is a really good sort of symbol for how you are as a person. Like if you have a problem with wearing a mask because it will both protect you and potentially protect other people from you. If you have a problem with that, then there's something really wrong with your wiring, as Sarah Palin's husband would say. And so, but I do believe this time we've all had together, apart from each other, rather, is going to make us more cognizant and sensitive to other people's needs and to, you know, I think it's going to make us more compassionate people when we all go back. Mm-hmm. And I, that may seem a little snowflakey, but I think it only can when we've spent so much time being reminded of how we can affect other people's health and well-being. So that gives me hope. And also like, you know, when you look at the places where people are wearing masks, where people are being sensible, how the virus is being controlled as opposed to places that are being anti-scientist, you know, making a mask like a thing about your civil, I mean, I think that actually is heartening to me, even though it's awful because it means more people are being affected, but it makes sense to me, and like science and sense, and it's actually, you know, in the times we live in, it's actually great when you think, oh, science actually works. That's right. So hopefully people will, you know, take that on board.
Yeah. That's a good thing to give you hope.
What about you?
You know, it's something about like my longing for people and community. It's wonderful because it makes me think about people other than myself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm doing fine. I'm so much more stable and lucky and apparently well-disposed towards living through a pandemic. Like I have my books and I don't really need a lot else. Yeah. But you know, I long for community and I long for people.
Yeah.
And that makes me want to show up for people.
Yeah.
You know, I think that part of it is something a lot of us are feeling.
Yeah.
And the only way to get back to birthday parties and picnics in the park and watching movies under the night sky with thousands of strangers you don't even know is by taking care of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I guess that's the same thing. We're all kind of in this, you know, we all understand why we want to go to a bar and talk to people. It's actually quite, you know, the way that everyone's saying that, you know, all the apps have destroyed kind of the way that people socialize. I think this has been really great because you can see people really want too much right now. They want to get out and conjoin and everything like that. So it's sort of like we've all been rebooted. Our whole systems have been rebooted in a way that I think is actually quite positive in terms of how we interact with each other and how we value each other, hopefully.
I hope so. Can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
Well, maybe I have two. Well, my one quick question is, am I looking at like a Freddie Mercury picture over your shoulder? What is that on the floor on the other side in that beautiful frame?
You want to see? That's me and Spy Kids. Let me get it for you.
I want to see it.
This is a thing that was on the set. You know that movie Spy Kids that I was in?
Yeah.
1,000 years ago. So this is on the set. It's me as Mr. Floop on the cover of People in Espanol. And it's a funny sort of wonky frame that was in on the set of the movie. So I got quite a few fun things. One, and there's a guest house down on this property that's got a sofa from Spy Kids, a big wonky purple sofa. And I've got a few things. I was going to auction this off actually for the Club Coming Community Chest, but I never got around to it. And I'm actually rather glad. I like it.
I love it. You have to keep it.
I know. And it's such a moment in time for me. Look at the state of me.
You look so happy, actually. I don't know if you're faking it, but you look pretty happy.
Loads of makeup on. It's always good.
Always good.
Second question.
And then I guess can I get two more questions?
Yes.
Okay, is there anything gossipy about you and like something crazy and fun or surprising from your time in the pandemic that the viewers of this would just die to know? They'd just be gagging?
I think they would be surprised about how much I butched it up. I came in to talk to you from burning some, from a bonfire, and which I started, and I drag branches and blah, blah, blah. And I'm monitoring it out the window right now. The smoke's kind of gone down. I've got a lot more. I've got to reignite it. I've been power washing. My recent things I've bought are a power washer, a chainsaw, and a leaf blower, and a lot of paint and deck stain. I've been staining my decks, painting Adirondack chairs, clearing brush. Oh, yes. And what else? Kind of, you know, I'm making a little, I've been dry stone walling.
Oh my God.
End of my bruised finger, you can see perhaps.
Oh, yes, I can see. That's not a manicured finger.
No, these are not manicured fingers. And I've got red paint on my hand. I'm not a Lady Macbeth, like I've got bits of paint on me. And then I've been making a stone path along there. I mean, I love all that. And I think people don't really think of me in that way. But it's been really, I've been got back to, because, you know, my dad was a forester. I grew up on a country estate. And I kind of, you know, I know about plants and things. You know, you just sort of, it's in your DNA. And I know how you should chop down a tree and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Various things that I just kind of, and I enjoy. And I enjoy doing. I've enjoyed being up here as the seasons have changed and being able to sort of do all these different tasks. So it's so funny because we normally have like a gardener comes and, you know, because we're not here so much, so somebody comes and does the gardens and does all these, but they haven't, of course. And so, but some friends who help us with the house came up our first socially distant drink out in the garden last week, and they were like, they were joking about me. Oh, the gardener boy is doing just really. I was actually like, oh, thanks so much. So that's been exciting.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think if one were to Google your name, the word butch would not generally come up.
It doesn't terribly often. I remember when I was in the L Word, I had a green, I kept it. It's a green sort of sleeveless, what do you call it in America? Sort of dungaree overalls. Is it what? Overalls have got the thing, but it's actually, it's like a onesie, but with no sleeves, sort of a cloth onesie with little things on, you know, transfers and things on it. And up here, it just said butch. I kept it.
The designer had fun putting you in that.
Yeah, very much so. And also when I wear it, it's the least butch article of clothing I've got, but I just love the fact that it embraces that and says, proclaims that it's butch.
I love that. I will tell you that I went on one date wearing sort of mechanic style coveralls.
Yeah.
And I thought that I was looking so cute and butch. And then the person I was on a date with said, I love the ironic outfit. It's like, oh, okay. Well, didn't work. All right, I suppose my last question for you is, why are you so lovely and why do you support Outright?
Well, I've gone. My connection with Outright goes back to when it was called the name of an STD. What was it called again? Snigglehurk. That's right. I said, and you've got to change that. It sounds like an STD. It was called. It was the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. That's what it stood for. But so the acronym was Igglehurk, and I thought it's not catchy. Sounds like something you need to get ointment for. But I just got. I mean, I just felt. You know, I feel that I'm someone who has a voice and a platform, and I feel like as a member of the LGBTIQ community, I have access to the mainstream.
Yeah.
And also I'm always thinking like, you know, what else is there? Let's not be complacent, never be. I mean, I suppose I'm sort of an activist-y kind of person. I always sort of think, who else can we be helping? What is not, you know, I mean, I think it's a Scottish thing as well. Like, mm-hmm. I always say this thing, the phrase that I remember being repeated most when I was a little boy was, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. And so I think I grew up with the idea of mm-hmm. making sure that things were fair and trying to help, you know, mm-hmm. up injustice. So yeah, years ago, I hosted the Igglehurk Awards, and that was such fun. I met these amazing people from all around the world, like these lesbians from Mongolia, who were getting an award, and they'd like, you know, they had an LGBT center, and it was, I mean, you know, people had shot at it, and I mean, just the most awful things. They'd been kidnapped and everything. I mean, just awful. And yeah, there they were, and I they played a little video about them, and I was just so inspired to meet them and to give them this award. And then they went, oh, we loved you in the L Word.
You were like, where's Mongolia? Did you watch the L Word?
Yes, it really was like, what? So that was, yeah, and then I became an ambassador, and I just think it's a great organization, and it was one that I didn't know about, and I just felt it was at a time when I was thinking, you know, the wheels of change were coming, and some of the organizations I've been involved with, like the Empire State Pride Agenda, was where it kind of,
yeah,
it doesn't exist anymore, because it thankfully in some ways doesn't need to. So I just sort of thought, well, what's happening in the rest of the world, and let's not be so American or European centric, and let's try and help other countries where governments that are not, you know, and laws that don't exist to protect people, and just try and find out about that and try and highlight that. That's why.
Well, I love that. And I will tell you that I have a photo of my stepmother with you at that very first award
that you got
to Mongolians. Oh, yes, you're very famous in our family. You look amazing. My stepmother has shown that photo to everybody, her best friend, Alan.
Ah, bless.
Which is great because my dad's name is also Alan. So there's lots of hilarious jokes that come from that.
My friend Susie, like before her mum and dad, you know, we've been friends forever, and I know her mum and dad now, but for years I never actually met them, and we're just sort of, and they would always say to Susie, well, knowing Alan, blah, 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 and she goes, you don't know him, you've never met him. But I also have a photo of the Mongolian lesbians and me down the hill in the guest house. I got a little framed photo I guess Igglehurk sent to me.
Oh my God, I'm so happy we did that, yes! Oh, I love that. Okay, well, let me just tell you, Outright is currently working on our plan for the next year about all of the wonderful things that we want to do in this world, and it's not finalized, but I can reveal to you a couple of priorities. First of all, we're going to continue our campaign to ban conversion therapy.
Great.
This is so important. Conversion therapy is torture. It has become something that we consider to be acceptable, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And so right now, there are only 5 countries in the world that ban conversion therapy. This is incomprehensible.
Wow. 5?
I know.
That's incredible.
It makes no sense. So in 2020, it's 5. By 2021, it should be 10, right? We need to double it every year until this practice is gone. The second thing I want to say is we've learned a lot from this COVID pandemic. And one of the main things we've learned is that national and international crisis response mechanisms do not have an LGBTIQ lens. So like all those agencies that you think of as being there after a hurricane or after a tsunami or on the front lines with their hospitals that they're setting up in tents, a lot of them are religiously run. Including that organization that set up a tent in Central Park.
Yeah, and if you wanted to volunteer, you had to say that you didn't believe in gay rights.
Exactly.
You know, shocking. In Central Park, don't get me started.
Yeah, totally unacceptable. So this year, Outright is going to be taking it to the humanitarian organizations and making sure that when they say they serve all people in a pandemic after a hurricane, that it means LGBTIQ people too. A third thing is we're gonna continue our work registering LGBTIQ organizations around the world. And this is one of those things that can sound very wonky, but actually makes a lot of sense, especially at the end of Pride Month. You can't imagine the progress that we've achieved in the United States, even the Supreme Court case we just had, without LGBTIQ organizations. There is no progress in law and policy and cultural change without LGBTIQ organizations. So in order to produce change, we have to have our movement-based organizations. They have to be legally registered when they want so that they can do simple things like rent an office, open a bank account, hire staff. So every year we register half a dozen queer organizations. We're going to do that again this year because we think that's one of the best ways to drive change.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last thing is, it goes back to sort of where we started, which is, you know, this year we're going to increase our campaign against gender ideology. Do you know what gender ideology is?
No, tell me.
It's this very strange thing. It's the way the ultra-conservative right says that equal marriage, transgender rights, sex ed, access to abortion, birth control, all these things, they say it represents gender ideology, like we're evangelists
right.
for gender.
So, and they lump everything, all those things together.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it sounds a little bit like the old discourse on family or traditional values.
Right. Yeah.
But the movement to call all of us gender ideology advocates is changing political elections from Costa Rica to Brazil to Eastern Europe. And it's quite dangerous. And again, it's fueled by these conservative, very rich organizations. So Outright is going to increase our work to oppose our adversaries and to work in solidarity with people fighting for the right to abortion, people fighting for the right for kids to have sex ed in schools. That's going to be one of our biggest priority this year. And it's also about fighting the TERFs and showing that transgender rights matter.
That's great. God, all that sounds so amazing. So inspired by you, really.
Thank you, Alan. Now I'm blushing. You guys, Alan's flirting with me.
Well, I am, but I mean it. All right, Jessica, this is great. I better get back to my fire.
God, if I had a dollar for every time someone that said that to me. Thank you so much, Ellen. Thank you for being an Outright ambassador. Thank you.
It really is. And it's been great to catch up. And I'm sure this will be very informative and exciting for many, many people.
I hope so. More gossip about Alan next time.
Yeah, like my book adventures.
Absolutely. We could call this the Femme and Femme Adventures, Jessica and Alan on Zoom.
Really, it is actually.
Thank All right. you so much.
Take care.
Your day.
Bye. Oh, this is the embarrassing one. You've got to click so many buttons to get out. Here we go. We're going now. Bye.
Bye, viewers. We love you.
Yes, love you. Bye.